You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Elizabeth Whalen. Elizabeth, thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth, there's so much I want to ask you about all your work, but let's just talk about what it is that you're doing most recently that may help the listeners begin to get an understanding of what you do.
So right now I'm working on a collection of stretch fabrics, and they're all inspired by crystals that you would find in mollusks, and I'm focusing on the sea urchin. And these fabrics, the fabrics that I do, we work everything out by hand here in the studio, and we weave up the samples and dye all the colors, and then we move it over into production. So we work out what our concept is, and then we move it to the machines. And right now I'm working on drafts of sea urchin ideas and designs.
And you said crystals within mollusks. What does that mean? What is that?
Well, there. Some time ago, I read biomimicry, which is all about how nature is designed and structured by Janine Baynes, and I was really inspired by that. And I was actually asked to design a collection for Nike, for their action sports group, that was inspired by biomimicry, and that just got me reading, and I was really interested in her section where she talks about how will we build things, how will we make things going forward, being inspired by nature. And so one of the things that really caught me was that she talked extensively about mollusks and how they build their shells and why they build their shells to be as strong as they are, and that most of the, if I'm remembering it correctly, and it's been a little bit since I've read this book, but that a lot of the basic constructions of hard material are from crystal shapes. So I started to collect shells and started to look at them. And when I looked at the sea urchin, she calls out mussels and sea urchins and abalones and a bunch of things. And when I actually started to examine some sea urchin shells that I had picked up from the beach, I could see that their crystal shapes, how it started to inform the design of the outer shell as well. And I thought it was really beautiful. In addition, I'm just really interested and inspired by looking at the way nature constructs herself and trying to see it, and especially with smaller items. I think maybe because I work with woven materials and I make woven materials, I have to sort of think three-dimensionally in these sort of smaller ways, much more. And so I could see the mineral influence of in the sea urchin, and I, you know, that has inspired me to move forward in that particular direction.
So that's fascinating, and especially your talk about biomimicry, which I don't really know much about, but that seems to make sense. So in the writings you were talking about, and it sounds like in your design work as well, the idea of biomimicry, which means that the future of design or how we make things will be more and more drawn from nature.
Well, I don't know. I couldn't speak to how it's going to shape the future of design, although it's become recognized as an important design attribute or an important study of design, because the way things are made can often inform how we can solve things in design that nature can inform. And I'm fascinated by that, but I love nature, and I think that it's it informs my work and it inspires my work. And so I'm just sort of starting to touch the top of this for myself and bring it into pattern and bring it into cloth. And
But when you talk about a client like Nike, and it sounds like they were interested in the idea of biomimicry, or or did I misunderstand that?
No. I think you got that clear. That you're right. They actually brought the concept of biomimicry to me because Nike's always out there scanning the world for what's happening, what things are going on that they feel it's important to pay attention to that would have that influenced what their product is doing and how it relates to the world. And so they actually brought, I wasn't that aware of biomimicry before they brought it to me, and they just said, we want you to just start exploring the concept and how biomimicry could affect these designs. So I looked up some books, and there's a renowned book called Biomimicry by Janine Baynes, and so I read that book, and then the more I was reading it, the more fascinating it became to me. And it's a way of informing. And the other thing that's, I think, probably appropriate is that when I was in art school at RISD, I remember I was sort of struggling with the figure drawing class, and I was probably more intimidated than anything else. And my drawing teacher could see that I was, I was having a hard time. And so he said to me, go downstairs to the nature lab and, take a couple hours and just draw down there. And I love the nature lab at RISD. Like and it was there that I just learned to relax and look at things and observe them and find my way with them by holding my pencil or my charcoal. And so I just really developed a real appreciation for it, and I was also really fascinated by it, and I felt I could sort of get a grip with it a little bit more, at least from a visual point of view.
I love that. Well, I suppose there's a few things there, and I want to talk more about what happened post RISD, but that idea also of looking at the nature lab as a solution sounds is very beautiful. It reminds me of, I think it was Einstein who said in some beautiful letter to someone who was kind of upset about the world or, emotionally upset, he said, go out into nature and look there and you'll find all the answers. And I always thought that was so kind of odd, but beautiful that, I'm probably paraphrasing it poorly, but it was something to that effect, and that nature itself holds answers that are supportive, not just in terms of design. I think he was talking about design, but also somehow emotionally or psychologically.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I certainly hope so. I lived in New York for almost 25 years, and I relocated to Maine a few years back. And the reason was that I wanted more to be in nature more, and I wanted to start to really look at her and bring it into the work that I'm doing. But in the case of the Nature Lab, what was so important about that for me is that it calmed me right down. It sort of took the anxiety out of me. I don't know if it's just, watching the turtles move in the turtle tank and starting to draw them, that they, there was something about it that I was able to calm down and actually start to really look. And I was able to go back to figure drawing after that. But I always would go to the Nature Lab as a place to it was just a good grounding place to start. Even if it was drawing bones or if it was drawing, a stuffed fox, it didn't matter. It just was a start.
And what happened when you graduated? In between RISD and now, you've grown this design firm enormously, it seems. I mean, now having clients like Nike, which is sort of, I would imagine, a dream for someone in RISD. What happened when you got out? What were your first steps into this?
Well,
I'm curious how that happened.
Yeah, so I got out and I moved to New York City and I started working for a commercial textile interior firm in their design studio. And, I would just say I had a lot of student loans, so I, it was important that I get a job fairly quickly. And I found that I learned a lot from that. That experience about how you sort of design manage, because that's what we were doing more than anything else. They had a large product line, and you couldn't design the product line because they just had so much that they were doing. But I loved creating. I love working on, I like painting. I like drawing. I like coming up with weave structures, which is a very three-dimensional exercise. I like getting on a loom and figuring out how to make things. And so I worked there for a few years, and then I went over and I worked for a mill, an American mill, and that meant taking actual artwork and moving it into woven design work. And then I really felt that I wanted to do work that I had a relationship with. And so I didn't plan to go on my own, but it just sort of happened. And that was, I would say, 5 to 6 years after art school, after moving to New York. So I was sort of a baby designer, and it's not like I had some big career behind me. I didn't. I just wanted to start drafting, and I wanted to start making things and searching. So I started out of my teeny little apartment in Soho at the time, and it did grow. And we're not, you know, I'm three people in my studio. We've never been larger than that. But at one point, I started working with Niels Diffrient, who is a product designer, who actually taught at Yale at one point, I think in the School of Architecture, and as adjunct. But at any rate, he had come out with this new chair, and he needed someone to design fabrics. And I, through a series of different events, I landed this project, and it was a real, it really turned things for me, because what he required, and this was just so wonderful, was that he required the level of study and work that we did in art school, but then to move it beyond. So I felt sometimes that my professional experiences after art school didn't really put into practice what I learned and where I wanted to grow, which is why I went on my own. And then about a year and a half after being on my own, I met Niels and started working on these projects, and he would say, yeah, you know, I think you should dye 80 or 90 colors. And I was like, so we can take a look of a big color palette. And so that was exciting and also daunting at the same time, because he's like, go ahead and create your color, which is exactly what I wanted. I didn't want to necessarily take something off a Pantone palette, if that makes any sense.
So Niels was your mentor at the time, and you were, and that was at the point when you were just beginning to strike out.
Yeah,
on your,
very,
on your
very
own.
Shortly after, because I was really, I needed work, and I luckily had really good friends in New York that always kept me saying, you know, what do you want to do, rather than what do you have to do. They kept saying, what do you want to do? And I kept saying, well, I'm really interested in sports fabrics, because they're doing these weird, you know, there are these, all these new finishes and things that they're doing in sports fabrics. And so I'm just interested in that, and I'm still interested in interiors, but I want to really explore what my medium is. I mean, the textile medium is a very wonderful, rich medium. You know, it's pattern study. It's, in my case, if I'm doing wovens, it's three-dimensional study. It's color. It's things that you touch. So it takes in more than just the visual sense. It takes in how you experience something. So I was really into that, and I didn't know where I was going with it. It's just, and I think that's actually such a good thing, to not know where you're going. And I want to really emphasize that. But at any rate,
Niels. Stop there for a second. That's interesting. We'll talk about Niels in that. But to emphasize not knowing where you're going is important to discuss, because in this case, you're involved in also a commercial activity, surviving, clients, you know, research, and in trying to, as your friends were saying, find out what you really wanted to do, but you're also trying to, you know, meet the needs of clients. That would seem like a particularly hard thing to do in that scenario. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means? Yeah.
Yeah, it is hard to do. I think that it's hard to do, but it's also, it would depend upon the client as far as, you know, meeting their needs. And I think it is hard. I think it's important to point out I am involved in a commercial endeavor, my interest was to bring what I hope would be, you know, some more original work into that. Or at least that I would have an opportunity to engage in a process to discover something in the work that I was making for them, if those projects allowed it. And so I I sought projects that I could do that, and I wanted to create the work. I didn't. I wanted to make sure that, you know, the work that I was showing my clients was coming from my hand. So I think that is difficult to do, and it's also difficult when you're surviving. But I think it can be done. You know, it's not that it was. It's not without its challenges, but. But that's what I was seeking to do. I wanted to create the fabrics. I didn't, you know, I wanted to sit down and see what weave would work and what material would work. So there's material studies involved. And when, I think it's going back to what I said of, you have an idea of where, I have an idea of where I want it to go, though I don't know what that will look like. I think when I was younger, that was such an important value. And I've rediscovered how important that value is since my move to Maine, because I think as we grow and as we get into our, what we're doing, it's very easy to, and if you find success, which I've been fortunate to find, you see what's successful, and in some ways you want to keep reconnecting with that. But you can't reconnect with it the same time. I suppose you could, but that's, hasn't really worked for me, and yet I think we also, or at least I should talk about my culture and living in New York at the time, I think sometimes we think that we live in a culture that wants us to know where we're going all the time and have this direction and have a, you know, what the answer is going to be at the end, even if you're creating something, and clients think that way. So to now say, well, I actually, we have ideas of where we want to be at the end. How it's actually going to be, I don't know. I can't say that to a client, or I'd say that it would be a disaster. Right. But I allow myself that process, and for some reason I've been able to make a living and do that, sometimes really, really well, and sometimes less well, or, you know, so I'm reconnecting with that again in a way that's important to me. But
it's interesting what you said about New York and, you know, and the culture there and what it encourages, which makes me think, you know, of course you moved to Maine, to Portland from New York after being there for a long time. Why the move to Maine, and was that helpful in terms of, I mean, obviously it was helpful, but why was it helpful in terms of your practice, your business, your design work, as opposed to the, you know, the thriving, bustling culture of New York, which gave birth to so much of mm-hmm. your success, right?
Yeah. I love New York. I just want to say I think it's a wonderful place, and I'm so happy to have had the time that I have, and I go there all the time. So it wasn't an anti-New York move. It was more that I had lived in Maine before I went to art school for a couple of years, and I had spent a lot of time in the my vacation time in the summer here, and became involved with some organizations up here. And I found that I had always wanted to return to Maine, but I thought I'd be in New York just for about 5 years and then move back to Maine, and I ended up being in New York for almost 25, which tells you how wonderful New York was and how much it was a massive growing experience, and it was terrific. But if I wanted to have a different lifestyle, and I also really did want to be more in nature. I found that your quote about Albert Einstein is really appropriate to the conversation, because I found that I wanted to connect with it more and more, because I just thought the beauty was something that moves me. And so that really drove the move back. And then when I moved back, you know, it was like starting all over again.
Right.
So I actually really, I left my staff behind. I really realized I disassembled the studio in New York and reassembled it here. And it's taken some time, but it's been rewarding. I mean, I took clients, obviously my clients came with me, and I had built up a practice enough that, you know, I could maintain those relationships. But it gave me an opportunity. It really gave me an opportunity to step back and say, and ask myself, you know, what do I want to do, and how is that even relevant to the world? And to actually step back from the commercial pressures, which I think are by and large, I think they can be a really great thing because they require you to think on your feet. They require you to come up with solutions, and they still do. So I don't think that that's a bad thing. But I wanted to explore things a little bit more deeply, and I wanted to get into my medium even more, and I wanted to find ways of connecting its relevance to the world beyond me. So that's and I found that nature would probably help guide me. You know, by studying things in nature, it would help me form a connection, and so that's. That's what drew me back here. It's been about 3.5 years, and I think the first year was just about adjusting back and decompressing, and you take your New York energy and your New York approach to wherever, you know, your new place, and parts of that work really well and parts of it may not. So it's sort of readjusting, and then even that approach, and then finding, you know, being outside the large metropolis and, you know, large city metropolis. Well, I think I'll speak only for New York, but I imagine it could be something similar to Milan or Tokyo, or I have a friend from Amsterdam that just did something similar that I did a few years after me. But it's to say, okay, now I'm outside of that, and I still, you know, there's so many important issues to me. How do I start putting those into practice? How do I even start searching what they are again? How do I find visual representation or something that I can start to work on that's important to me? And how does it even work? You know, when I was in New York, the commercial applications are right in front of you. You know, if it's an office building, a stadium, a hotel, a school. And now I'm in a much more, you know, I'm closer to the rural world. And how is that, what's that relationship? How does design factor into that? And that's been a really an interesting thing to start to look at and explore. How does what I do, how could it affect a farmer as opposed to someone who's sitting in a corporation? I can't say I have those answers, but I think that there's some connection somewhere. And what does it have to teach me? That's the other thing. What does it have to teach me? So
that's very interesting. Yeah, there's so many different aspects to that in terms of just being creative in the context that you're in. The city, as wonderful as it is, and I love New York City too, but often, you know, I'm in New Haven, and for me, New Haven is the country. I mean, I can go for long walks in beautiful woods nearby, and it's they're both nourishing in a different way. They seem not to be, you know, something that you could easily swap for each other. That they're both very, very
right.
Vital.
I would say absolutely. I really, it's easy to be disparaging of either and either of them, and I that's not. That's not how I see it. And the other thing I just want to point out, too, is that, you know, our senses go through something completely different in each of those environments. And so now I'm in an environment where, you know, I might hear the wind more or the birds more, or as I'm walking on the ground below, depending upon the season, which is also great, you know, it could be a crackle of dry leaves under me, or the quietness of the snow, or they're all different textures and colors. And the one thing that was great when I returned was that I thought I would just start drawing everything right away, and I tried to do that. I took a month off. I go up to Brooksville, which is up in the Blue Hill Peninsula, so that's my retreat. And which is another reason why I moved back here. I also wanted to be closer to that area. And I found that I actually needed to look for a while before I could do anything. Like, I just needed to look. I needed to see the color of the sky and the color of the water and how things change. I needed to see the texture on the water, and I needed to look. I couldn't, I needed to just take the time to look before I tried to put it down. So. You know, when I was in New York, I would go to the Brooklyn Bridge, and I would photograph it. I would draw from it, and I did designs, you know, all inspired by the, you know, I love the Brooklyn Bridge. I love the idea of a bridge connecting. I love the connecting Brooklyn to Manhattan. I love the whole cityscape when you're up there. I love the cables because they're very yarn-like, you know, when you're looking at those cables of the Brooklyn Bridge. So they're just really entirely different environments. So I had to look. I had to look for about a year.
to find a beautiful place or to find just the right spot?
I found beautiful spots.
Oh, you mean just looking once you're in Maine?
You're going on a walk after a snowstorm and the intensity of the blue sky, which you can see in the city too, but, you know, the intensity of the blue sky is just like, oh my God, like that blue is incredible. And, and then you look at that incredible blue against, the water and, but before that I was like, I got to get the blue down or I've got to draw the way the trees are. And then I just had to say, no, just, you've got to look at the trees before you can start to draw them. And that's, I had to learn to look again. Or look differently,
Yeah, that seems to be so essential. I mean, for all artists, you know, that ability to have to look, but also to have something beautiful to look at, you know, which and surround you with and feel. So it's exciting. Before we go, unless I've missed something that you want to mention, I wanted to ask you what I always ask everybody at the end, which is what you're reading now.
So I'm just starting The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. There are a number of classics I feel I haven't read. So that's on the docket, right? I was actually searching for it. So I'm ready to pick that up and read that. I was just had finished some Ernest Hemingway. And I think I'm really into stories. I'm inspired by fictional stories and stories of people, and it's great. And also, that's what I'm reading now.
Well, thank you. That's great to hear. You know, those are classic books that I haven't read, and it would be great to read. But
I know I never read it. Everybody wants to. I am like my family is so unbelievably well read, and most of all my siblings, and they just roll off all these books that they read all the time. And I'm like, I haven't read that one. I haven't read that. And my mother gave me about five or six, saying, "Here you go."
And you draw inspiration from that. You're saying these characters, these often fictional characters that you're drawing from.
Yeah, and also I love reading how the writers are putting together words. Like I get inspiration from that too. Like I'm not a writer, but I love how they put together words that might reflect some human condition or what they're observing. I recently finished Ernest Hemingway and Immovable Feast, and just his observations of Paris are really great.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and wish you great luck on all you're doing.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.